Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Farmers rarely get a break. To operate a farm is a 24/7, 365 job. Besides running their operations, the men and women who provide us with our food each day also spend time lobbying politicians at all levels of government. On today's show, Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Alan Carruthers outlines some of the challenges local farmers are facing. He will talk about the carbon tax, legislation stalled in the Senate, and local efforts to keep good agricultural lands in Northumberland County out of the hands of developers. If you ate today, then you will want to hear this interview. I'm so pleased to have with me today Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Alan Carruthers. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
Before we get to our interview, I wanted to express my condolences on the recent passing of Sid Atkinson. He was a former president of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture and a longtime board member. He was a leader in the agriculture community and a friend to many. It's a really great loss for the farming community. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Sid was, when the passing of Sid, in early December, he did leave a huge hole in Northumberland County and across the province because he was part of the Dairy Farmers of Ontario. And I've known Sid, for many years. Sid's picture and stuff in the paper showed having hair, and I remember Sid when he was a young boy and he had hair. Sid's sisters and brothers, I knew them. But Sid was very unique. He he was a type of person that he wasn't afraid to ask questions. He wasn't afraid to say his opinion, and he was well respected for that. He was well respected, so
yeah. Truly a great loss. Now let's go on to our interview. How would you characterize the past year for farmers in Northumberland?
Well, this past year in Northumberland, we've had a lot of challenges. We were working on some of the implications that the federal government had put in place. They took and imposed a fertilizer tariff over a year ago. And of course that was a federal hit for all the farmers in Canada. $33 to $34 million was added to the cost of our production through that tariff. And the Federation of Agriculture, I believe Canadian Federation of Agriculture and Ontario Federation of Agriculture tried to get it back a little bit easier. They finally in the last one of the last budgets, they put in the climate action fund change, and we could gear some of our solutions in properly placing fertilizer. But I haven't heard of anybody utilizing that program yet. So, the federal government has been pushing the carbon tax. And of course, Robert, you probably hear a lot about the carbon tax just about everywhere. But in production of food for everybody, that carbon tax, every time a piece of equipment moves that either brings our seed, our fertilizer, our chemicals, there's a carbon tax on that. There's carbon tax when the farm machinery gets to the field. Then, when the harvest comes, there's the carbon tax is implemented again. And then when we dry the crops, we've got no other we've got no other avenue to dry grain efficiently other than using fossil fuels, natural gas, propane. And then, of course, when that crop gets sold and taken to the processor, carbon tax is implemented on it again. And then when the processing is done, the carbon tax is put on the fuel that delivers it to the grocery store. So people don't realize how expensive carbon tax has come. We can't, as farmers, we can't pass that on. It's part of our everyday expenses. But that carbon tax is getting passed on to you very quietly and very, you know, in every invoice and stuff you pay, it's there. It's not shown, but it's there. So, you know, this carbon tax, for lack of a better opinion, it's trying to help pay for some careless spending that the federal government is doing. And I can't see it any easier, really.
Two things out of what you've just said. One is, it's my understanding there has been two attempts to pass legislation federally to help farmers with costs associated with drying crops.
Yes.
What's the status of that right now? Because I know farmers are very frustrated that it, before the election the last time, it was almost through and then it got reintroduced and it still hasn't passed. What's the status now?
So the first time was Philip Lawrence brought it to the House of Commons, and he had it in there, and of course the election was called and it failed or fell off the table. So the next, there was a private member's bill again, and it got voted on at the House of Commons and then went to the Senate, and they had some amendments brought in. One was that they wanted to keep fossil fuels on drying grain, and they also wanted to have farmers. The other amendment was farmers had to pay for heating on the heating of their barns. So, you know, livestock producers like poultry, you know, young livestock, whether it be calves or pigs. They have to have, you know, some extra heat and stuff in there to keep them warm, especially when it's cold. So the federal government kept stalling it on doing their election process. And then I believe it was in early November, the federal government, the Liberals, put in some more Liberal senators to make sure that they could offset the vote. And we listened to Senator Rob Black at the Ontario Federation of Agriculture Convention in November. Senator Black is well respected, you know, right across Canada, you know, with all parties. And he was talking about all the issues that were to deal with putting the, or having the vote go through the Senate. So anyways, Senator Rob Black was invited to go to the climate conference, and they voted the one amendment for the heating the barns, and it got passed. That part had got passed, it was defeated. But anyways, that kind of threw a lot of that work that the Ontario farmers and the Canadian farmers had put in for keeping fossil fuels out for heating barns. And it's still in the Senate, waiting for the total vote on it. But it's very depressing to see that go on. And this carbon tax, for lack of a better term, it's a way that the federal government has been able to help pay for a lot of their crazy spending.
Well, I wanted to ask about that because my understanding is that the carbon tax is collected, but then it's supposed to be paid back to us in these checks that they keep sending us. Now, do you not receive checks from the government that are related
to
this? No.
So not as a carbon tax credits. So when I get a bill for propane to dry my grain, that's just going to say $4,000 bill to pay the propane. The HST is in there, but the HST is put on after the carbon tax is put in. And I don't have an invoice close to me, but I think it's like 10 or 12 or 14 cents a liter. And so that is added in. So if I have 4,000 liters of propane, you know, if it was $12, it would be $480 worth of carbon tax. And the fuel plus the carbon tax is the HST is added on to both those totals. And your HST is refundable for an expense on your drying of your grain. So it's a very frustrating thing to see dollars put on, and we absorb that. We don't have a way to say, Robert, here's an extra $480 you're going to have to pay and stuff for our grain. It's a cost and stuff that we have to incur and stuff in our business.
I'd like to move on. Earlier this year, the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture was part of a forum looking at the preservation of farmland in Northumberland. Now, there are many pressures, especially from developers and provincial government, to meet the demands for affordable housing. What, if anything, has changed since that forum? And could you bring us up to date on what's been happening locally around that issue?
So the protection of the farmland, you know, from development, like with the meeting we had the end of July at the Best Western, it was well received. There was lots of people that expressed interest in how they could help. Excuse me. So the provincial government had brought in the Build Homes Faster, and there was lots of holes in the way it was presented. Every parcel land could have possibly three severances. And the Ontario Federation of Agriculture has got a homegrown campaign to try to protect farmland and or make it more aware to you and me and my cousins and relatives, whatever, you know, across the province, that every day 320 acres of land is being lost to development. So the knowledge that was gained through there, like the Liberal critic, Stephanie Bowman, she was there. Eric Gillespie was there. He talked about how things were. Some of those things have been, some of the pressures have been eased. You know, the provincial government has realized that there was too much stuff going, so they pulled back on the three severances per parcel. It's still out there. There's still a lot of people that feel their land is developable, but Robert, you and I have to eat three times a day, and a lot of people rely on locally grown food, reasonably priced, you know, affordable food. And if you have to have your food trucked in from United States, China, Asia, Europe, that food isn't going to be as cheap as it's being grown here in Ontario. So the frustrating part of it is there's a lot of development. There's a lot of land that can be developed. We're trying to change the municipal politicians and the provincial politicians. And now the federal government is getting into the housing problem, but we're looking to intensify the development. So don't take a 100-acre parcel and put 100 houses on it. Put it in a way and stuff, A, that those houses go up and the development for houses and stuff goes up and not out. Your infrastructure is there. If it's, you know, if it's in place, your natural gas is there. You know, if a municipality has got their sewer and water all set stuff, it's a lot easier to have everything set up that, you know, 100 homes could go into a couple of outlets compared to, you know, having to put in 100 outlets across a 100-acre field. So and we're trying to push the municipalities or try to steer them towards staying in the hamlets because there's a lot of land that could be developed or utilized for housing and or jobs in a municipal boundary.
It's interesting when you're talking about this. Are you getting any traction, though? I mean, it's great that you're talking to people and trying hard. But I was just talking to someone the other day, and they know of a farmer that's leasing land out Roseneath way. And they just got notice in the new year that the owner had passed away, and the family now wants to sell the farm for development. I mean, This is the kinds of pressures, I guess, that we're seeing there. Are you getting traction with your appeals? Are people listening, especially at the local level?
I would say for the most part, they are listening, but there's always that one problem and stuff, that you kind of lose. You think you've lost five steps. You know, you've gained 10 and you lost five, or you lost eight, you know. So we're still, it's going to be a constant battle. You know, we're less than 1% of the actual the population in Canada now, and we have to feed 100% of the people. So, and in Southern Ontario, 5% of the land in Southern Ontario was able to grow food, but that 5% is also vying for houses, businesses being built, and highways being built. And whenever there's a chunk of land lost, it's very unfortunate. And the costs, nobody really sees the cost right away. It becomes quite expensive after a few years.
As I was reading that the aging of farmers and the shrinking number of farmers or people going into farming is a really critical problem. So what's being done locally to ensure our farming population remains strong? Is there anything going on that's trying to help keep people on the farm?
A lot of bigger farms, you know, family farms will maybe purchase some more land, you know, if a farmer may be retiring. There really isn't much to of an incentive to keep the family there. It's the will, I guess, that the farm family would like to continue on. You know, like my grandfather, my great grandfather, my grandfather bought the property at the east of Cobourg. They had moved from a family farm that where the Canadian Tire was in Cobourg, and it got sold in the 19-teens. They moved to the farm where my father was born, and I'm the next generation. And then my son, he's quite interested in farming, and I hope that, you know, maybe someday my grandchildren are. So it seems to be, if you've got some interest in helping grow the crop, you know, feed the animals, and they like it, they'll probably stay. The education part is a costly thing because, you know, we've had schools close over the last 25, 30 years, agricultural schools. So Guelph is the go-to place now for education for agriculture. And you either take a degree course in Guelph or you take the diploma course that's in Ridgetown, because Kempville was closed 12 or 13 years ago. So, you know, Ridgetown is 3.5, almost 4 hours away from here.
It's interesting because there is some talk in agricultural circles about the underlying assumptions regarding large-scale operations aimed at exporting as being too predominant, and there's a need to return to smaller operations. It is a move away from, I guess, bigger and better thinking. What do you think about that as an approach? Do we need smaller farms, back to the family farm?
There's a lot of people that are very passionate about that. You know, there are people that you know, they've made a decent income, and they like to buy, you know, 25 or 30 acres that's got an old barn on it and have a few cows and a few pigs and chickens. And there's kudos to that. Like, I'm impressed in that they're doing that. But it's there's a lot of restrictions for that, because you have noise bylaws, smell bylaws. You know, a lot of people don't want to hear a rooster crowing in the early morning. They want to sleep till 9 or 10, you know, and of course, with livestock, you have manure, and in the summertime you have a lot of bugs, and a lot of people don't like bugs. So yeah,
we've talked a bit about in our conversation about what you want to see more done around, both provincially, federally, and municipally. If you were a teacher and you were giving out grades, what grades would you give the federal government, the provincial government, and the local governments for the work that they're doing to help farmers?
I would give the local governments a pretty good mark. The provincial government, you know, for the most part, the provincial government has been good for a lot of things. You know, with Doug Ford getting in, at first he listened a lot better than the previous government. The federal government, I would tell them they might have to repeat the year, because it's not, you know, they're not getting a passing grade.
What should we be looking for in terms of trends for farming in Northumberland County in 2024?
More precision farming, placing that fertilizer closer to the plant, more precision when it comes to planting, not having doubled up seeds. The cost of seed is becoming higher because of a lot of other costs. Alternative fuels are being experimented with, but not enough, because, you know, when it comes to drying grains or heating our barns, fossil fuels is about the easiest way to do it. There aren't big enough heat pumps to take heat out, and of course our electrical infrastructure isn't strong enough to support all this. Electrical vehicles, there's more and more agricultural vehicles that are utilizing electrical power. That's still a concern, because, you know, as there's more need for electrical vehicles, whether it be tractors, combines, cars, or pickups, there's the need and stuff for the energy to recharge them. And I don't think that the electrical infrastructure is strong enough for that, at least not in this area. I know that they're bringing in electrical vehicle charging places and stuff, eh? And I know that there are concerns and stuff even with how to deal with the expired batteries that go with the cars and the trucks. So not as much as the cars yet, but, you know, a lot of the rechargeable batteries that are for power tools, scooters, bikes. So,
Alan Crothers, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Alan Crothers.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.